Hello and welcome to the first a la carte podcast for 2021, the year that we all hoped would be better, but it's already as bad as 2020. I don't know. I mean, we're only 18 days in, but it's pretty awful. Anyway, trying not to speak about horrible things. We have a lot on our plate today because there was so much in the last month since we took our break. So we'll be catching up on Wonder Woman, The Mandalorian, WandaVision, and all kinds of other shit. Anyway, I'm Valerie.
I'm Tatiana.
I'm Camille.
Third.
And so we're going to just start with, like, news stuff, which I guess we'll start with what Camille just told us, which was that apparently it's just been revealed Peaky Blinders is coming to an end with season 6. I hate to say it, but we watched the first episode, we loved it, and we never watched more. And I know everybody loves it, and I know I'm supposed to watch it, but at a certain point, it got to the point where we were like, okay, we'll watch it when it ends, which I guess means doing it soon.
Yeah.
I have never even seen it, so I guess I'll join you in the watching it when it ends.
Maybe if we can actually get together.
Yeah, it's one of those.
No, probably not anytime soon. So you've been watching.
It's on the board.
Yeah. You've been watching since the beginning, though, Camille, right? Uh-oh, did we lose her? She stopped moving.
No. Oh, there she is.
Okay.
There, sorry. Yeah, no, I watched all of it. I don't think you can still hear me.
And it's supposed to be amazing. I mean, Killian Murphy is your lead. It's great. So, but it's funny. It's very niche here. Like, what is it on here?
Showtime, I think.
Is it Showtime?
I feel like it is Showtime.
If it's even on a network I know it's on Netflix, but I think it's on a network before it goes to Netflix. Like, although I can't wrong. But yeah, I have like a few friends who are really, really into it, and then that's pretty much it. Most people I know, you know, have never even heard of it. But it's supposed to be so good. So, you know, it's definitely on Netflix, as far as I remember. Now that I'm saying that, I'm going to go wrong. But I remember seeing it there.
Yes, so it is on Netflix.
This last season airs. I guess people should catch up. Another thing that just came back, so we only have like one episode to judge it on, is Batwoman premiered last night, which gave us our first look at the new Batwoman. What did you think, Richard?
I liked it. You know, Batwoman was never my favorite of the Arrowverse shows, but I still enjoyed it. And it's kind of interesting to watch it, where essentially this has to act as a new season premiere or a new series premiere, kind of rewrite the status quo. And knowing that they had to pretty much juggle a bunch of changes that they weren't intending, because like they couldn't finish because of COVID. So there's a lot of story threads that were kind of left dangling that they had to resolve or shift in new ways. You know, one episode in, I'm hooked. So I'll stick around for a little longer, see what's going on. I like the new Batwoman as far as like background. She's a very different than Kate Kane was, and it seems to the overriding theme of this season will be about like class and privilege. Like, so I think that'll be interesting. Some of these shows do better in their season. I enjoyed the second season of Supergirl more when they kind of got more political. And I think Batwoman might benefit from the same thing.
How did you feel about her, like, compared to Ruby Rose?
I mean, it's only one episode, so it's kind of hard to like compare, but as far as like character wise, I enjoyed her quite a bit. I think it's fun because she's not as because the fun part of this episode is like because she just kind of, I don't know what I want to say, but her use of the bat suit is very like interesting. We've never seen a character have to adapt to using this type of suit, so it's kind of, that was a fun like change of pace for a Batman type character.
When do the rest of the DCEU shows come back? Are they back? Are they all back this week?
Flash
February,
and...
I think.
Oh, okay.
February and
Flash and
Superman and Lois.
Yeah, and then there's no date yet for Legends or Supergirl yet.
Right.
I think, does Black Lightning have a date yet, or
I'm not sure it does. I don't think it does.
Yeah.
I mean, so... obviously, it's all kind of a mess. There's no crossover this year, right?
Yeah, they canceled the crossover, I think. Oh, wait, no, just kidding. Black Lightning will premiere on February 8th, apparently.
Okay, so we're going to, like, slowly get... They'll slowly roll them out and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll
is
be interesting.
Black Lightning being canceled?
Yes.
Is what?
Okay. I thought I could see.
Black Lightning ends after season 4. Yeah, and Supergirl. But they're prepping a spinoff, a Black Lightning spinoff, which I think is kind of weird. For Khalil, of all people. For Khalil.
What?
Yeah. And even worse than that, China and McClane is leaving the show. Not that it matters, because the show is ending. So I was like, what? Can't you just stay the whole season? What's going on? So she's leaving the show this season. The show is ending. But after she leaves, and they're trying to spin off her boyfriend, I'm like, no, I don't want any of these things.
That's weird.
But anyway.
Yeah, that's weird. Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, I guess at least you'll get some new content. Obviously, it's only going to be like a half season is all they can switch out. But the CW desperately needs something, which is partly why we're getting fucking Walker Texas Ranger. I'm sure I still don't understand why they're making that a show,
because somebody apparently listened to my dad. Apparently that sounds like a show that my dad would pitch. Like, not only is a Walker Texas Ranger reboot, but one with Jared Padalecki. Like,
apparently Jared Padalecki wanted to produce it, but he wanted Jensen Ackles to star in it, and Jensen said no. And so then he did it. And it's just funny because I've seen enough, like, in the Supernatural fandom, because obviously they're going after them thinking, oh, they'll like to watch it because of Jared. And it's like, oh, you're really targeting the wrong people, because most of those people are not Jared Padalecki fans. They're Jensen Ackles fans. And this is not the kind of show that they want.
Yeah, that is kind of an interesting choice of why they made that. I don't know.
Because if I go on Tumblr, I'm getting Walker ads a lot, and I'm just like,
really
not at all something I would ever watch, sorry. So I don't know, but it's the CW, so it'll never get canceled, except apparently Black Lightning and Supergirl are, so who knows. it's weird. So they desperately need content, so I guess it's a good thing.
Well, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I would say it's important to distinguish between canceled and ending, because, like, I think Supergirl, I don't think you could call Supergirl canceled, they're just kind of ending. Because canceled, I feel like it's more abrupt than everything, where at least, like, Supergirl and Black Lightning hopefully will have time to, like, write proper endings for themselves.
Like, end on their own terms or something, right?
Yeah, whereas, like, I think Flash is going to run for at least until season 8. I think they want Flash to go for as long as as Arrow did.
Right. Yep. Oh boy.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny that they dragged out the Green Arrow and the Canaries show that they were supposedly going to, or Birds of Prey, whatever it was called. I can't remember what it was called. Anyway, and then they're just finally like, no, it's not happening. It's like, I think we've known that for a year now, but thank you for updating us.
I was holding out hope that they would do it.
The CW is really bad about that. They can't seem like they have a real problem. They try and spin off so many things, and then it's like, oh no, never mind. I mean, they tried to spin off from Supernatural twice, and neither one of them worked. Even though the second one I thought was a good idea, but when most of your audience is there for the hot white boys.
Exactly.
It's not really going to work if you spin off a show about the girls. Although I would have watched it, but...
I would have watched it too, and I don't even watch Supernatural.
I'm actually in the middle of a rewatch right now, and I, like, every time they come on, I'm like, aw, what could have been?
Aw. Could have had it all.
I know. I would have watched that show. That's okay. Anyway. Let me see where I'm at. Oh, just a quick aside before we start going into real reviews. I watched a show this week that aired in the UK this week on ITV called The Pembrokeshire Murders, which takes place in Wales, which is, you know, obviously a huge part of why we watched it. But It stars Luke Evans, which was really nice because he is Welsh, but most people don't know that because he always does like an English accent in anything he does. So it was nice to see him actually get to do his own natural accent. And it's based on a investigation that happened into a series of murders that had taken place from, like, I think the first one was in 1985 through 1996, but it was reopened in 2006, which is funny because it's like literally right after Matt left Wales, so he had no idea about this case. And so it's the investigation into what happened, and, you know, they do find the culprit and bringing him to justice and stuff. And it was really good. If you like true crime, that kind of thing, I recommend it. I don't know where it's going to play, if it is bought by anybody here in the US. It was only three parts. It was 3 hours, and it played on consecutive nights. But it did really well. It was like 6.5 million viewers for the UK, which is a lot. For Doctor Who does about 9 usually.
Oh, wow.
And that's usually about your highest. So
that's pretty impressive.
It's not bad for a completely new out of the box like thing.
Yeah.
So if you can get it in some way that, you know, may or may not be legal, I would assume eventually BritBox or Acorn or somebody will buy it to air, but it did just air this week, so keep an eye out for that, because that was good. All right, so we're going to try and do these in order, and we're going to get them wrong. We're going to do some reviews of things that came out over the last month, which we're going to start with the one episode of The Mandalorian we didn't get to talk about last year, which is the only one that matters. I'm just kidding. No, it's not. It's the really important one that nobody will shut up about.
Yeah.
So how did we all feel about the finale?
I was sad.
Yeah,
heartbroken.
Exactly.
There were tears. There were
tears. Baby.
Oh, definitely.
I guess it's just like it definitely leaves me wondering, like, what is this next season going to look like? You know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I would love to watch Luke train, you know, baby Yoda, but I don't think that's what the next season's gonna be. So
they can't afford that much CGI.
Exactly.
For next season.
Exactly. So instead it's gonna be like sad Mando? Sad Mando with no baby Yoda?
Reluctant leader of Mandalore.
Exactly. Exactly. Or, you know, like helping Bo-Katan, and then maybe them duking it out or whatever, you know, they maybe need to do. And then, you know, the heartwarming reunion in the finale. Like, do we have to lose baby Yoda?
I don't want to wait for the finale.
Yeah,
Bob Iger definitely got on the phone the next day and was like, so he's coming back, right? Like, because exactly.
What about our merch?
we still need him.
Right. So yeah. So hopefully that's what I'm hoping. He won't be gone too long because they need him for the merch. But at the very least, it's going to be at least one episode of, you know, sad Mando. So we'll see.
Sad,
but otherwise, yeah. I think that the thing that was maybe disappointing was just how easy it was once they got to, like, the hardest part was getting to Giancarlo Esposito, because I always forget his name, character's name.
Moff Gideon.
Thank you, Moff Gideon. And then Moff Gideon was like, okay, I guess you could take him. But I was like, what? Why did we? You couldn't have just, like, FedExed him to me? Why did we have to do this? So, but yeah.
I just love how, like, as soon as something starts to happen, Moff Gideon's like, wait a minute, you literally just sent me a message saying, oh, I'm coming for him? I'm not going to be suspicious of what's going on. Something's obviously happening.
And he was just here, take him.
But yeah, my big thing was, like, I had to give Favreau and Filoni, like, mad props, because, like, they had a story they wanted to tell. They saw the popularity of Baby Yoda. Anyone else would have been like, well, crap, we can't do that. But they were like, no, this is the natural progression of the story, and this is how it's going to end, and we will deal with the consequences of that going forward. And yeah, so it was, as hard as it is to sit there with me, you know, especially me sitting here with, like, 6 Baby Yodas watching me as I record, because we have Baby Yodas everywhere. I was glad, but I totally, like, when I realized when he reached, and I love that we're all still calling him Baby Yoda, by the way, when he reached for Mando's helmet, and I was like, oh my god, he's gonna take it off, and I'm gonna cry, and I totally cried.
Oh yeah. I think everybody cried.
Yeah.
How could you not?
That's why I think it's weird that like everyone, like, obviously Luke Skywalker showing up was a big deal and it was awesome. But yeah. I feel like a lot of people who kind of wrote off as, oh, it's just fan service, I was like, you know, yes, it's fan service-y, but also like that's not the heart of the scene. Like, you know, if the scene doesn't focus on Grogu and Mando, then, you know, then I would agree with them. But because that's the way the scene ends, is that, and the final shot, or like the final few shots, are the close up of Grogu and Mando looking at each other, like saying goodbye. So I would say it worked very well. I was heartbroken by the end of it. I was like, don't go. Like, I think it's the first time I've ever been like, oh, I don't want Luke to be here.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right.
Right. The only time I'm not like Luke.
like, why? Why did you have to go?
It's like, damn it, Luke, get out of here.
I did see people who were being weird, and like they were like, it shouldn't have been Luke, and it's like, who else could it be? He's literally the only person training Jedi at this point. There's very few Jedi left, and he's the only one who's about to start training people. It had to be.
I think it's because we've now all been conditioned because of the Marvel television shows to not expect the movie characters to show up. So like Luke Skywalker showing up felt like a big breaking of that rule. Like, you're not allowed to do this. You can't do this. That's why, like, until even when the X-Wing showed up, I was still under the impression that it was going to be Cal Kestis from Fallen Order or Ezra from Rebels. Like, I was positive, but then I was like, the obvious answer was Luke. But it was so obvious that none of us thought of it.
I was sitting next to, you know, Matt, and he's absolutely, like, the minute the X-Wing shows up, he's like, there's only one Jedi who flies an X-Wing, and he's freaking out. And I'm just sitting there like, I'm not going to believe it until I see his face. I've been burned too many times. And then, he's like, those are, you know, like, every single thing, he's like, those are the rogues. And he just keeps yelling, that's Luke fucking Skywalker over and over again. And he's like, then it was, you know, the hand, or the saber, and then the hand. And it obviously had to be, but...
I like how you said you wouldn't believe it till you saw his face, and then you saw his face, and you were like, oh, put the hood back on. Put the robe back on.
Well, I was also, like, in that, okay, but is it going to be, like, who is it? Is it somebody else playing Luke, or is it actually Mark Hamill? And I'm, you know, as much as, you know, obviously I'm a huge Sebastian Stan fan, I am so glad that they put Mark Hamill. Because he deserved that, and you can tell from his reaction to it that he's so happy that it got to be him, and that this is his final Luke moment on screen now. You know, he's obviously not happy with what this, you know, like them or not, Mark Hamill is not happy with what they did with Luke in the sequels. So it was nice to see him. Like, I think he said something about, like, it was good to have Luke in a position where he's a beacon of hope again. Mm-hmm. It was like, yes, thank you. We did appreciate that, because I'm sorry, I don't like Luke in the sequel. Part of the reason.
they kind of messed him up, but it's okay.
See, I'm in the opposite camp. I love what they did with Luke in the sequels, and especially because I'm now rewatching. I'm rewatching all of the movies because my roommate's never seen them. We just finished the original trilogy, and I it actually makes me love it more because it kind of makes more sense, but. I definitely, there's a weird section of fandom that's like insistent that there's this war going on inside Lucasfilm, and that this was like some giant middle finger to the sequel trilogy, which I don't see. I see Luke's scene in this one pretty much lines up with what we know was what is established in The Last Jedi. So it feels like a very complimentary, you know, piece of the story. And also, like, you can have it both ways. Like, that's what I wish the Star Wars fandom would realize, is that, like, you know, we can have awesome Luke Skywalker rolling in like a badass moment, and also, like, thoughtful, you know, kind of contemplative Luke in the sequels, and they can coexist. Like, it's just filmmakers' different interpretations of these characters. I think you know, if we can have Captain America behave a different way when Joss Whedon writes him as opposed to when the Russos write him, we can have a Luke Skywalker that's a little different.
Yeah, I'm never going to get over the fact that he supposedly tried to murder his own nephew.
He did not try to murder him. He for a split second thought so. The same way, and he was ashamed of it, the same way he almost murdered his father.
But
again, if there's
standing
one
standing over his body with a lightsaber, and the guy was a kid.
If there's one thing we know about Skywalker men, it's that they are impulsive and make a lot of bad mistakes and end up paying for it in the long run.
Can't argue with that. Yeah.
That's the Skywalker brand.
I did like immediately go to, I hate the sequels even more for putting it into my head that Grogu could die at Ben Solo's hands.
You know that's one of the things Bob Iger was like, is like, so we're not killing him, right?
Right, exactly.
He just wasn't there for Ben Solo's.
Have you guys seen that meme
that's like Grogu and Ben Solo in class, and Ben's like, hey Grogu, don't come to class tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to choose to believe, because at this time in the timeline, Ben would just be being born, I think.
Yeah.
So Grogu, I don't think Grogu's going to become a Jedi. I think he's going to learn to use his powers and walk away like Ahsoka did. So I would assume that he'll be long gone by then, is what I choose to believe.
I think that's safe to say.
He'll go back to Mando.
Yeah.
And then in 10 years, when Lucasfilm needs to make episode 10, you have a star primed and ready
exactly.
that you don't have to pay.
Exactly.
And that way you don't have to pay anyone to come back except a puppet.
A puppet.
And by that time, somebody's going to need to be doing a voice, but that's easy.
True.
Yeah. I really appreciated that Mando just does not want, like, he gets the Darksaber and he's like, I don't want it. Please take it.
Right.
That was
I enjoyed that.
I love Mando's whole like, I don't care. He's like, he's the guy that keeps fumbling into the Star Wars universe mythology.
Yes.
Like, he just is like on the outskirts. He doesn't want any part of it, but somehow he just keeps ending up in the middle of it. He's like, ah, oh, dang it.
Exactly. He's trying to do all the side quests, but he keeps being like caught up in the main story somehow, and he's like, no, I just want to do my little side quest. Leave me alone.
Like,
yeah,
have you seen those compilations of all the moments where he's like, does this look Jedi to you, and asking Luke Skywalker to his face, so are you a Jedi? And you're like, oh my god, the most clueless man in the galaxy.
We did have to have like this whole conversation just after it happened with our friend Corey about, you know, well, it's true, it's like, this is a huge galaxy, and the Jedi seem to have been in one little spot, so they were basically just doing their thing, and it is true that it's like the way we can see things trickle and how time works, you know.
Yeah.
That we can believe bullshit in this country.
Yeah.
Or this planet, and
well,
rewrite history after just a few years and things like that. It's like, no, I guess, you know, maybe it is true that people on other planets just have absolutely no idea if any of this stuff is real because they just don't see it.
You know, there was a huge misinformation campaign by the Empire to, like, wipe out any record of the Jedi, or, like,
true.
Say they were all a myth.
Yes.
And everything.
And that kind of stuff works.
It sadly does.
It always does.
That's where Disney, I don't think, was hoping they were gonna their Star Wars installments would be as relevant when we realized, oh, these guys can come back.
Yeah. Too quickly, unfortunately.
Admiral Hux is definitely a proud boy.
Oh god, yeah. But yeah, so I have not watched Clone Wars or Rebels. I watched like a little bit of Clone Wars, and Matt's watching without me now. But as I understand, when Bo-Katan originally got the Darksaber, it was given to her, and that was when Mandalore fell. So that could be part of the reason why she's like, I can't just take it, because even if there's nothing actually spiritual about it, it's the image.
Yeah.
That last time everything went to shit, so no, I can't take it. I have to win it, and I actually don't want to kill you, or at least not in this moment. So now he is really stuck in the middle of all this crap that he's like, but I don't, can I just let somebody like stupid punch me and take it and then you can kill them?
He's probably gonna, I'd love to see that for the season premiere, just for them to resolve that whole thing within the first 5 minutes and like, just beat me up. Okay.
There you go.
Move on. Yeah.
But yeah, now we have to wait a full year, right? I think they've said it's
even longer than a year now, because Book of Boba Fett will take Mandalorian's spot in December, and then the Favreau said that Mandalorian will start filming after Book of Boba Fett wraps.
So the whole Book of Boba Fett thing was super confusing, by the way, because like for the days afterwards that everybody was like, but is it really a new show or is it just a chapter? Like, what? Because the show's called The Mandalorian.
And season 3.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. That was confusing. I was glad when they were just told us what it was. Because, I mean, he's a Mandalorian and you've just had chapters and it would make sense that your new chapter is not about the same Mandalorian. That would work.
It's sad. Right. It would
work. So, yeah. I've never been a huge Boba Fett fan. Like, Matt is, but he just basically likes all non-face characters in the original trilogy. And boys like Boba Fett. But
yes, we do.
But I did actually like him in this story, so I was really glad that they gave him something more. So
oh yeah,
interested. Same. Plus, you know, Ming Na Wen.
This is the first time.
I'm so excited to see her. Exactly. That's why I'm in it. I'm like, okay, Fennec Shand is alive. Same. I'm here. Also, I just love that little teaser part. You know, the sitting on the throne and the whatever.
Yeah, that was so cool.
Chugging that whatever yeah. that was, just sitting there. Yeah, I'm there for her.
Yeah, Boba Fett has always just been a cool armor, so I'm glad that like they gave him a character. Like that's the thing. Like Boba Fett this is the coolest Boba Fett has ever been.
Exactly.
Like actually been. Like he looks cool, but like he never did anything cool in the originals.
I like that he stopped and got a new spray on his armor. By the way, in the middle of their quest,
yeah. Everyone was saying, "I gotta get a new job on this armor first," but like they got the kid. What weight? But no, it has to be all shiny and before we face Moff Gideon or something.
If I'm gonna face this season's big bad, I've got to be in like shiny brand new armor. And then he's not even there anyway, so it doesn't matter.
You know, right. It's funny. It only dawned on me that the reason he wasn't there was because he definitely would have shot Luke. Or try to.
Oh god.
It would have been like a moment, a really awkward moment. Wait a minute. I left you in the Sarlacc pit. Oh well.
Yeah, I think seeing that come up, be like, I gotta get out of here. By the way, we didn't actually say it when we were talking about Luke Moore earlier. I appreciated that they never even say his name, but at the same time, Mando literally just hands him over.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, you're a Jedi? Here, have him. You don't even know his name. How are you ever supposed to maybe see him again? You don't even know who the guy's name, what the guy's name is.
Grogu, at least he knew Ahsoka's name.
Grogu,
it's so cute that he referred to Ahsoka as the nice lady. Remember the nice lady who taught you about the Force? It's so funny. Yeah, the nice lady with the laser swords.
Aw, I love Mando.
Also, before we move on, I forgot to mention, or like that, you know, Robert Rodriguez is producing Book of Boba Fett.
Yes.
And I'm just going to put this out there. Robert, Disney, Favreau, if you're listening, and I know you are, put Danny Trejo in the in Book of Boba Fett and either make him a Jedi, but give him a lightsaber that's shaped like a machete. That's all I'm asking. It's not that hard.
I like it.
Yeah.
He would fit right into that. So
you know, if Danny Trejo doesn't get into a Star Wars project, I'm gonna be really upset. Like that'll be the biggest failure to me from the Disney Lucasfilm era is no Danny Trejo in a Star Wars product.
That he would be absolutely perfect in that kind of situation. So the whole whatever's going down with not the Fets anymore. Yeah, that would be a perfect place to put him. I was really glad though that, like, because Robert Rodriguez is a huge Boba Fett fan, so it's he's perfect for that. So it should be exciting. But now we have to wait until December. Because
did you watch? Did any of you guys watch the Disney Gallery Mandalorian thing for season two?
That was
fun. Where they show. Where they show that he made what you call it, that Rodriguez visualized his action scene with using his kids and action figures.
So cool.
Yep, that was great. That's how you know somebody really wants it, and he's got the kids in the clothes and then the action figures, and he's ready to go.
My favorite statement was where he's like, "Yeah, I just used an old Boba Fett Halloween costume I had." I was like, "I just think it's funny that Robert Rodriguez has a Boba Fett Halloween costume lying around."
Who doesn't? I'm kidding. I'm sure we do. Actually, no. You know what? Matt has a lot of armor. I don't think he has a Boba Fett one.
It's because
he has several stormtroopers. It's because he only gets them if he gets them made from the molds that made them originally for the movie. Mm. So, you know, he probably hasn't found the ones from the right people, or he can't afford them, because that would be it too. Anyway, all right. Well, if we're ready to move on. We're going to go to the next in the sequence. Although, actually, Bridgerton should probably be next, but whatever. We're going to do a Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman came out on Christmas Day.
You can always say because of Pedro Pascal.
Oh, there you go. That's a good
segue. That's your transition.
That. There we go.
Let's pretend I said that. Okay. from one good Pedro Pascal project to the not good one. I'm sorry. I did not like Wonder Woman 84 at all. There's very little I can say positive.
I love the first 10 minutes of it.
Yeah, because everything that they do in Themyscira is great. So why not just make a prequel with that little girl? I just want to watch that. I don't really need to watch her in
When modern. It started, I was like, wow, this is great. And then after everything was downhill after that. Like,
yeah.
Action scenes in the mall. On the
I love how they felt the need to address that she would have been around for World War II by telling us that she was kind of sort of there when the camps were liberated.
Yeah.
But she still obviously didn't do very much because nobody knew who she was.
Right.
She can't. So, like, she was there and she didn't stop it, is all that you're telling me.
Right.
So
I guess, like, it would have been more interesting if they had her, like, undercover doing stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh, she doesn't want to reveal herself, but she's there trying to help, you know? That would be nice.
That's what they were trying to tell us by tell us that, you know, that, yeah, she's, like, hiding and she tells people to not say anything, but it's like, yeah, but there would have been rumors. And if she was doing very much, people would have seen.
Yeah.
And people don't keep secrets.
Yeah, I don't know.
Just because you tell them not to tell people about you, they will talk. So it's kind of weird that she got away with just being in the Smithsonian for I don't know how long. That was never even explained how she got there. So many things were not explained, to be fair. So.
And then things that were explained very badly. And so I don't know why. Just overall, it was incredibly boring. My brother left right before the golden armor. He, like, walked out. He was just done. And I told him later, and I was like, don't watch the rest of it. There's no point. It was just not good. And, yeah, my dad, you know, afterwards, he was like, my dad doesn't like superheroes, really. He'll watch them with us, but he's not a fan of any of them. But he just turned to me, and he's like, well, at least Marvel know how to tell a story. I was like, wow, okay. Tell me how you really feel, Dad. I don't know. I don't. The first movie, like I've said it before, was two-thirds of a really good movie. With that last act being not good. And it scared me a little bit when, before this movie even came out, Patty Jenkins said that Warner Brothers were they made her change it. But then right after she said that, people who saw test screening said her ending was better or was worse than what Warner Brothers gave. So it's like, oh, God. And then we saw this and I'm like, now I have absolutely no desire to see Rogue Squadron if she's coming up with a story, because it sounds like she's not very good with a story. She doesn't, you know, maybe she needs to just be a director and not be writing anything.
That's, I'm wondering the same thing too, because it was, there was another writer who helped with the first Wonder Woman and then wasn't there for the second one. And the second one, like, the first one I thought was really good because it was such a simple, straightforward story. There was like one thing happening and you're following her progress through it. And then this one, there's like three things happening and none of them are very well developed. And I feel like I don't know anything about Diana by the end of the movie. So I was like, okay. So yeah, so I definitely think that she needs to let someone else take over. Let it be a woman, but let someone else do the writing for the next movie. Yeah. Because no, honey, no.
To come to Patty Jenkins' defense, I will say that the script for this one might not be entirely... this one has a lot of script issues. But I would say it's... I don't think it's fair to completely count her out as a writer because she also was the sole credited writer on Monster. And Monster's a very great movie, so...
That's true.
You know, not everyone's going to bat 100 every time. And, you know, I think probably the biggest issue with this one is that, you know, yes, you're right, Alan Heinberg didn't come back, which he helped write the first one. Jeff Johns is more of a writer on this one. And a lot of Jeff Johns-isms are present in Wonder Woman 84. A lot of the common traits that you find in his writing are present here, which I think Jeff Johns is... There's a lot you can say about Jeff Johns. But as a screenwriter for films, his ideas don't translate well as a screenplay. So, what were we gonna say, Camille?
No, basically that there were so many things happening in this film, and I don't know why Wonder Woman herself was sidelined in her own film. Like, I feel like I had more. What's his name? Max Lord.
Well,
I saw more of Max Lord, and I didn't even see enough of Barbara, and I wanted to know more about her and her thing, which was, there's so many issues. So, where do you even start? Anyway, too many things happened.
I'm gonna be this film's defender because I actually did like it a lot. I think it has.
Go ahead.
I think there are issues with a capital I. There are certainly problems with the movie, but I think this movie very much feels like both Superman 2 and Batman Returns, where they have a lot of issues, but I think the good outweighs those issues. And I think Batman Returns is the most apt comparison because, like Batman Returns, Wonder Woman is sort of sidelined for the villains. Like, and both films are very much the director's, you know, very much vision of these characters. They're, you know, they kind of shape and mold them to like fit the vision for the story they're telling. Because Maxwell Lord and Cheetah have very different origins from the comics, which, similar to Catwoman and Penguin in Batman Returns, are drastically shifted. So where Batman Returns is very much Tim Burton telling a Tim Burton movie with Batman characters, this is Patty Jenkins telling a Patty Jenkins movie with Wonder Woman characters. And, you know, and kind of just like the first Batman and Wonder Woman were huge hits. The studio gave them carte blanche, you know, to kind of do whatever they want. They were given more creative freedom. And it doesn't always work because, you know, Batman Returns also has a very weird script if you look at it. Like, it's all over the place. But, you know, what makes it work is the tone, the atmosphere, the spirit. And that's where Wonder Woman, to me, worked, is I loved the feel of the movie. Like, I loved just the earnestness of it, the, you know, we're going to do a complete 180 as far as like tone and genre and style that pretty much shows that you can tell a Wonder Woman movie in any type of form, that she can fit into any type of story. And I love the commitment to making, like, I think that's the big thing for a lot of people is when they heard 1984, they were expecting a lot of 80s references, where Patty Jenkins was more, no, we're going to make a movie. Like, what if Wonder Woman was made in the 80s? So even down to some of the visual effects choices, they look very like 80s-ish. And I like that, you know, this one is definitely a minor thing. But one aspect that I loved is the creative choice to have Wonder Woman always on the defensive. That she's never on the aggressive attack. All of her action scenes are about preserving and saving lives as opposed to punishing and serving justice. Like, I thought it was the White House scene is probably my favorite scene in the movie. Cause I love that she tells Steve to like not use the sword. It's not these guys' fault. And that even when these guys are trying to kill her. Yeah. even when these guys are trying to kill her, she's always on the defensive when Barbara's like throwing these guys. So Barbara's on the
them as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Barbara's on the aggressive where, and I think that's something a lot of superhero movies have lost. I think the last superhero movie where the primary action was focused on saving civilians was Age of Ultron. Like a lot of the action is now just based on like punching and fighting, where it was nice to see action sequences based around, you know, saving people. And I knew from the mall sequence, I was like, all right, this is going to be my type of movie. I love the tone. I love the spirit. I love the kind of winking nature of it. And yeah, and at the end, the message at the end of the movie is definitely a mixed bag, especially now. I think like Diana's idea that everyone can be good and hopeful is definitely a very optimistic view. I think had this movie come out last summer, that message probably would have landed better, but now it seems a little, I guess, naive, but you know, Wonder Woman is, this movie is very much it's a big story. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to have a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? It's very much like a folktale or a fairy tale,
yeah,
where, you know, the messages are big, you know, it's broad, but it's supposed to be that way.
Yeah.
But I will say,
yeah, there's a big moral to it. And then,
yeah. The movie has definite issues from a script and structural standpoint, and some creative choices I'm truly baffled at. But like, I will say that, you know, most of the good outweighs the bad. So I think this is going to be, I hope it's kind of like a Batman Returns situation where people weren't as hot on Batman Returns when it came out, but over time it kind of grew a following and appreciation. So I think give it like, and I've seen this just happen with a lot of superhero movies. Like when Age of Ultron came out, everyone hated it. Everyone was just like, this is, you know, Marvel at its worst.
To be fair, now, most people still hate that movie.
But do they though? Because like, I feel like I've seen a lot of like culture, like reappraisal of Age of Ultron in recent years. Like people are like, this is actually a really good movie. Or this is like mm-hmm. I just saw a thing on Twitter, like going through the other, like a week ago, about like people talking about, can we stop pretending this was a bad movie? And just people like kind of being like, yeah, Age of Ultron was really fun and really, you know, so.
No.
I think.
I have especially my mind about Age of Ultron, sorry.
Yeah. There's no one like Age of Ultron. I will continue to pretend like it's a terrible movie.
There's no one like Age of Ultron? Am I also the only one that likes Age of Ultron here?
Pretty much.
No, because it came out at the same time as Mad Max Fury Road, I remember. Oh. I had no expectations about Mad Max at the time, and I had high expectations for Age of Ultron.
Well, here, the hot takes are going to keep coming. The hot takes are going to keep coming. I was not a fan of Mad Max Fury Road.
I haven't watched it.
Oh, yeah, no. I got so much from people were like, why didn't you like Mad Max Fury Road? And I was like, it's not that I hated it. It wasn't for me. Like, I know it's a good movie. It just didn't click with me. But everyone was like,
you can look at some movies. You can look at some movies and recognize that they're not, like, good, or that they're good or not good, even if they're not for you. There are movies that I love that are terrible.
I love Cinderella Story. Does that make Cinderella Story a good movie? No.
I was definitely like, I did not like Mad Max Fury Road, but I would never call it a bad movie. Just it did not click with me. I remember telling someone like, I just don't like the aesthetic doesn't work for me, and like, you know, like, which is funny because then someone called me, like my friend was like, you hypocrite, you liked Aquaman with an octopus playing drums, but the guy on the guitar was too much for you. I was like, look, what can I say? I like my octopus playing drums.
I'm just fine.
I feel like I tried to lower my expectations for Wonder Woman, but it's the Wonder Woman, the original one, is the only DCEU movie I like at all.
You didn't like Birds of Prey?
I like Aquaman.
I haven't seen Birds of Prey.
Birds of Prey is, yeah, I love Birds of Prey.
Yeah. I would say, honestly, ever since, I think, yeah, I would say now I'd say the DCEU is like pretty much batting average is pretty good for me. Like I loved Wonder Woman. Shazam, I loved Aquaman. I love Shazam. Shazam is great. Shazam, Birds of Prey is fun. So this is war now.
To be fair, I've really gone off Zach Levy.
Oh, yeah.
So
I get that. I get that.
Is at least part of it, not all of it. I thought the movie was boring. But I will say this, and I was thinking about this recently. There are MCU movies that I love, that I know are not great. Like, and that I was trying to figure out why, like, if you put them on par, and I realized part of it is the MCU has done enough to make me care about even the characters that I wouldn't necessarily. So even when they're not perfect, I'm like, but I see its place and the importance of this in the story overall. So I probably like those movies more than I would if they were just standalone things. Whereas DC is not making me care about any of these characters. And if they stop making DC movies tomorrow, it wouldn't matter to me. And I think that's part of the problem. So I go into these movies and I'm like, even though I know they have a connection to, I haven't seen half of the movies, and the ones that I've seen, I didn't like. So I don't care about the characters. And whereas, plus, to be honest, Shazam, too much of it reminds me of Big, and I actually didn't like that movie when it came out. So I kept comparing it to that too. And I'm like, which is funny, because that is a good way to lead into the conversation of the most problematic part of Wonder Woman, which even if I had liked the movie, would have destroyed it for me, which is Wonder Woman has sex with a man. You could basically say it's rape.
Yeah.
Because he's not consenting and she has sex with his body. How did anybody think that was okay? And Patty Jenkins she retweeted somebody's tweet where they compared it to Big, and the fact that, you know, the woman in that movie has sex with the aged body of a child. Ew. But she's not aware of it. And yes, I've always had a problem with that. That was made
Everyone's had a problem with that since it came out.
That was made in 1980.
Yeah.
Just because your movie is set in 1984 doesn't mean you get to follow what we thought was okay in 1984. We thought blackface was okay in 1984. We kind of realized that's not okay anymore. And fucking Ghostbusters came out in 1984. And there's literally a scene where the possessed body of Dana is trying to seduce Venkman, and Venkman recognizes that she's not her and he won't have sex with her because he's like, I think he says she's not home or something. Yeah. So we knew in 1984 that it wasn't okay. And yet you seem to think, you know, and if it was reversed, if it had been a woman's body that was possessed, you know, the outcry would have been worse. Yeah. But it doesn't make it okay because it's a man.
Yeah, it's definitely a choice that I want to know. I would really want to know by the creatives why, because like that's where it feels like this was like a rewrite or a re-edit, because it almost feels like that's supposed to be the cost, like Diana's cost for her wish, that like it's Steve, but it's not Steve. So it feels like that was at one point supposed to be like does she want to like let him go or give him up when it's not really him? But then it's like it becomes about her power. So it's like that's where it definitely feels like there was a rewrite or like if they reshot anything, that was something that got changed.
Yeah, maybe. Because
why didn't they just make him like Steve?
Exactly. Like even if he isn't really Steve, it could just be like, you know, create the body out of thin air. You know, like why not?
He just goes to like Infinity War dust at the end.
Exactly.
Yeah, and like the whole
poor guy.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's like the whole. Oh, go on.
I was gonna say Corey is a screenwriter, and he thinks this is where there was a rewrite. That with Steve, the idea was you couldn't create nothing them out of nothing. So it had to come from somewhere, and that was why the idea was you had to have somebody else's body. But the problem is you then later in the movie have warheads that are all like nuclear bombs that are created out of nowhere.
Yeah, exactly.
So he thinks that there was a rewrite there and nobody thought to fix it.
Yeah.
That's probably true.
Yeah, and like there's definitely I know when I saw it I was like, okay, I get that this is sort of like a thing we did in the 80s with like stuff like Quantum Leap and stuff like that. But also, one, Quantum Leap is primarily a 90s show. I know it premiered in 89, but it had most of its run in the 90s, so that comparison doesn't really work for summary. But also, like you said, like just because it was it happened in the 80s, that's not something we should like still do. Like, you know, yes, I understand that she's making a commitment to making an 80s type movie, But there are elements of 80s movies we have certainly left behind. Like, you know, there's a good reason why no one in Hollywood has decided to remake Porky's. Like, of all the 80s properties, there's probably a reason why that one has been like, you know what, we don't need to do this.
Yeah, and the trying to defend it is just making it worse. And I think that's part of the reason that I'm just like, I don't know if I want to support you if you're trying to defend this, especially as a woman, because you should know better. Mm-hmm. Like, unfortunately, there's a lot of gross men in Hollywood, but you should know better than that. And I don't know.
Yeah, I would honestly love to hear her and Jeff Johns's like kind of explanation, like an actual discussion with them on why mm-hmm. this choice was made.
Yeah.
Because I understand in theory what they're going for, but I think in execution it was one that definitely should have been thought about more. Like, that's the thing. It's like, you know, I think this is an idea that probably sounded good on paper, mm-hmm. And interesting on paper, but when you really get into the nitty gritty of it, it is gritty for sure.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly problematic. Oh yeah, definitely. It's going to be one of those things where it is probably the biggest thing that hurts the movie. And even as someone who liked it, I'm just like, I don't know why you did this.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I will say the one good thing about the movie, Linda Carter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that part was so good.
That was awesome. That was so cute.
That was really fun. That was really fun. Yeah.
I hope they means they actually do something with her going forward, as opposed to just it like totally one-off cameo.
They would, because like it would be like insulting to be like, oh, here's a scene, and then we're gonna have like two spinoffs and a sequel, but nothing for you.
Well, here's my theory, is that I think, obviously, I don't think it's gonna be this character, but I think Linda Carter will appear in the Flash movie, because I think it's very interesting that they did not show Linda Carter's Wonder Woman in Crisis on Infinite Earths. And I think they were saving her for the Flash movie. Since we're already meeting another Batman, I think it'd be fun if we met an older Wonder Woman. Plus, you know, like, again, can you imagine the pop that would get from an audience if you showed Linda Carter? Showing Linda Carter already was big enough, but showing her in the Wonder Woman suit again, like, that would be huge. So I don't think we've seen the last of Linda Carter, and I think I'll bet money now that she shows up in The Flash.
You still think that movie is going to happen?
It'll happen. Superhero movie development is a weird thing.
Especially, I don't know. It seems to be especially bad for poor DC. They just can't. They're throwing too much at the wall, and they can't make it stick, and then they have the problem.
If Aquaman can happen, anything in DC can happen. Like, you know, again, Aquaman is still the highest grossing DC movie, so, you know, up incredible. Is down, you know, everything. Who said the apocalypse didn't have a funny side to it?
So Flash movie happens. Do you think it will be the one they have planned, though? I would think, to be honest, I expect Ezra Miller to be recast at some point. At this point, especially because of everything that's happened with Ray Fisher, the mm-hmm. smartest thing they could do is just start over. Mm-hmm. Be like, you know what? This way we just have fresh, clean slate. They're not really trying to make them connect anymore, so what does it matter?
I don't think they'll restart it, because I feel like they do have a lot invested in this Flash movie. Plus, because they already have Michael Keaton back as Batman, I think they're very much committed to the multiverse thing. This might be Ezra Miller's only Flash movie. They may be recast for that. But I think they have a lot invested in this project, because they've hinted pretty much that this is going to be their explanation for the multiverse for an audience. So I think that Flash is probably a priority right now at Warner Brothers, just to get some stuff in order.
I suppose. That would make sense, but I don't know. It's
hard to believe, you know, it's been so long.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I think it'll happen one way or another. We'll see what they do with it. But
the reason I'm more likely to believe it now is just because I feel like we've gotten closer to the movie now than we've ever been before. Like, we've had directors before, but like, we haven't had like concept art shown. We haven't had like a production date pretty much confirmed. The only thing right now holding up production is the fact that they're using the same set that Fantastic Beast is, and that's right now holding up production because of issues with that movie.
Another movie they should really just scrap, but you know.
That's one that probably needs a definite reworking. Someone at Warner Brothers is just like, oh, their PR person is having probably like the worst, gonna have the worst time.
Yep. All right. Moving on from superheroes to corsets. Is that a transition?
Also with like a problematic consent.
Also, right? Yeah. Also,
can
kind
we
of
please talk about it? Also, yeah.
There you go.
These transitions are fire. They flow so naturally.
In on Netflix last month, and I watched.
It's like a TikTok musical about it. I mean, someone's building a TikTok musical.
Is there really
already
a TikTok musical?
Just like what they did with Ratatouille. It's a whole other thing.
I never want to hear from anyone. I never want to hear from anyone my Avengers musical is a dumb idea again.
Ratatouille made almost $2 million. So, like,
wow.
This is the world we're living in. Just saying. Anyway.
How funny.
Sorry, Bridgerton.
So yeah, yes, Bridgerton happened. It I did was happen. Like, it was ridiculous. I've never read the books. Mm-hmm. So I'd never heard of them until I heard the show was coming. I was kind of like in for the first four episodes. Like it was ridiculous, but I was like, yeah, I'm okay. All right. And then it just went to crap. And I really just didn't care by the end. I don't know.
It's trashy.
It's so trash. It's bad Harlequin romance. Like there's good Harlequin romance.
Yeah.
Even though it's Harlequin romance. So not really. And this was just, and I had a friend who said it's her favorite book series of all time, and I'm like, I hope the books are better, because this was awful.
No, they're not, apparently.
Okay, wait. Listen. Okay. I started reading the book because I was so interested. I wanted to know what the comparisons really were. Okay. I'm not very far, but from the second it started, like, yes, the consent scene that we'll get to is worse in the book, for sure. Yes. But the actual books themselves, with the dialogue, is so much crisper and funnier and wittier. Anthony is not a dickwad. Like, he actively supports his sister and has been rejecting every suitor she doesn't want. So the reason she doesn't have suitors is because she doesn't want to marry any of them. And that's, like, instead of because he just, like, controlled them to death or whatever. And then randomly decided that she had to marry the absolute worst one. Like, literally, the characterizations in the show don't make sense. I don't understand why they chose this life when the characterizations of the book are right there. So Daphne's been on the market, for, like, this is, like, her third year or something. And that's why her mom is just, like, desperate. She's like, please marry someone! And that's why she does the thing with Simon, because she's like, I just don't feel like it. I don't want to marry anyone, so I'm just going to pretend. Like, I'm going to stay off the market by pretending to be with this dude, who will also stay off the market. As opposed to the stupid, oh, if I date him, now everyone will want to marry me. It's like, what? What does this mean?
None of it made any sense.
Exactly!
And I'm like, people got so distracted by, one, the actors are really good, two, the costumes and, you know, production values are like, wow, like, Netflix budget.
It looks amazing, yeah.
Yeah.
And everything's great, but then I'm like, just think about it. Well, a lot of my friends are like, did you watch Bridgerton? I know you like period drama, blah, 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 and I watch it. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Right. Every time someone says Gossip Girl meets Jane Austen, I'm like, this, Jane Austen is rolling in her grave. How dare you?
Excuse me.
I was like, I feel like I need a palate cleanser and I need to read and or watch every single Jane Austen story now.
No, I watched like some other, also because this is written by an American, right? So this is, this is so obviously like how an American thinks Regency England should be. So it's like really bad fan fiction, which really pissed me, because you could tell. And then I'm like, oh, because it's British period drama. It's British actors, sure, but like, listen to the dialogue. It doesn't sound natural at all.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I binged a couple of like actual British period dramas after, just as a palate cleanser. But like, they were mediocre, but like, I missed the subtlety. It's not even that subtle. But this is just completely like in your face, right? I mean, the one thing I really love about Bridgerton is the diversity.
Mm-hmm.
That, because it's Shonda Rhimes, so like, yeah.
Yeah.
The diversity, which is something you will never see in a period drama, to be honest. So, fine. But the rest of it, really?
Yeah.
I mean, good for the actors. Like, this is their luck. Because I know a lot of them, I've seen them in smaller, obscure British shows. And I'm like, okay, this is their big break. Good for them. Now everyone on who subscribes to Netflix knows you, and you're gonna your careers are gonna launch fine. But other than that, I'm like, Tatiana, are they gonna do? Do you think all? How many books are there? Like all for each sibling, right? Eight.
There's eight siblings. Yeah. Which and half of them just are not relevant, and then the dudes all look the same, so I can't tell you the difference between them. I only know Eloise, and
I love Eloise.
Yeah, I Eloise is great, and Penelope. Okay,
what's so funny though is Penelope is from Derry Girls, right?
That's why I knew her. She looks so familiar.
And I found it so funny that her character in Bridgerton is like this. Well,
yeah.
Before the the twist,
yeah.
I think that she's so naive and innocent, mm-hmm. and I'm like, you were literally on Harlots as a harlot, so. So anyway,
I wanted to like it so much, and it was fun for a bit, and then I was like, what is happening? I mean, the one episode I was like, okay, you know, if you want to throw a sex scene and that's fine, but then we had 20. Uh-oh, should we stop?
I know.
No, okay, let's keep going.
Too much. It was just
The
wedding night is fine. It's like, okay, it's the wedding night. Okay. And maybe.
Yeah.
And then the next episode was basically just. Wedding? This is too much. Even for, I don't know. I don't know who is this appealing to. It's none of the whole thing is so weird. Like, they were doing it everywhere. Like, in the library, in the. I don't know.
In the hallway?
In the hallway? On the stairs?
I get that this is a honeymoon for them, but it's like, I don't need to watch every single time they have sex. Yeah, it was, I mean, and if it was to hammer in the whole part where he was obviously trying to keep her from getting pregnant, okay, we got that after like two times, so.
Exactly. You don't know the show. I mean, she's obviously not getting it, which is a whole other thing. Like, I refuse to believe that she was completely ignorant, and they were playing it up as her mother never taught her or whatever. It's like, I refuse to believe that at the time you were completely ignorant of how these things work.
I mean, they work to an extent, but there people talk about everything. There's very little to do in your lives but talk about all of this stuff.
And if you're being primed for marriage from the get-go, you would know the essentials. So anyway, so I found that super weird. Although, yes, like Tatiana said, I read comparisons with the book, and that scene is actually really a lot worse in the books than on the show. But the thing is, the book, I think, was published in 2000. So it's been 20 years, and everyone had been complaining about that scene for years. So you'd think that the Bridgerton showrunners or writers would just get rid of it completely. Right.
Like, you should some go other in. Things.
Anyway,
I was gonna say you should go into what that scene is.
Should it
yeah,
be?
Just.
I'm curious as what the scene is. Like,
you kind of have to.
I did not watch Bridgerton. I've been meaning to. It's not like I have anything opposed to it. My roommates watched it, and everybody I know watched it. But I just elected to do Cobra Kai over New Year's instead. And then I got distracted.
Choice, Richard. That's honestly
but like I've heard good things, but I've heard a lot of people just talk about that. Apparently it's the fifth episode you guys are talking about, where something sixth episode. Okay, yeah. What it's one of those episodes where it's like I'm just like I've been kind of curious. I was like, what happened? Because like, you know.
So do I get into it, Valerie?
Yes.
It's basically a rape scene. Okay. It's hard to say it that way because it is. It's since we were talking about Wonder Woman and the dubious consent thing that was happening with her and not Steve. So that's a whole other thing. Here it's subtle. That's why a lot of people are still arguing about it. It's subtle enough that some people will never consider it that. For me, it's pretty clear. I mean, there was no consent there. Because, so anyway, just to summarize, the main characters do get married at one point. They get married in episode 5. So then, you know, then episode 6 is the honeymoon when, like, Valerie and I were saying, everything's just sex. And that was weird and annoying at first, but like, fine. But what just really disturbed me was the last scene, because basically, before they got married, it was a whole thing that he said to her that he can't have kids, when he actually means he won't have kids. So biologically, he's capable, but he just made, it's this whole thing, he swore to his on his father's deathbed that I will not continue our line, etc. So I will not have kids. And her whole thing is she wants to get married to have kids. So at first he didn't want to marry her because he knew her dream was to have kids. But then, and he tells her, but I can't have kids. But she says, no, marry me anyway. So they get married. And she thinks this whole time that he's just physically incapable of doing it. But you can tell, because also she's like really ignorant about sex, that he just pulls out every time so to prevent her from getting pregnant. And then she finds out, she asks, who was it? She asked one of her lady's maid or something. So yeah. Really, how do I get pregnant? And so it was explained to her. So the next time they have sex, she flips him over and she goes on top. And then, so this is the scene, like, he realizes what she's doing. So he says, wait. I think he says it twice, like, wait, stop. But she doesn't stop. So, yeah. Then he comes and then she gets upset, like, you deceived me, blah, blah, blah. You said you can have kids. But he said, stop twice. And I said, that's pretty clear to me. And it's doubly disturbing because it's a black man and a white woman and the whole dynamic of a white woman taking advantage of a black character who wasn't black in the books anyway. But yeah, so it's one of those weird things that people will argue it's not a rape scene because what, they're married and he was into it when they started, all these things. It's so unpleasant having to explain it when for me it's pretty clear.
Yeah, so, and the again, if it was a woman, if he had done that to her,
exactly,
everybody would have immediately known what the problem was. And that's, yeah, I don't know why. And yeah, she's played as the victim because he lied to her. And okay, yes, there is obviously part of that. He should have been honest with her. But yeah, that doesn't mean she gets to force.
She still shouldn't have done that.
Yes. He still, whether she likes it or not, has the right to make that choice. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, she ends up forcing the issue. And then,
wow, that's a...
And he and never then even recognizes it. Like, I think even in the books, he never even recognizes that she took advantage of him. He actually feels guilty that, oh, sorry, that, you know, I can't give you what you want. She kind of forced it out of you, man. But, yeah, it's so disturbing. And it's one of those things, like, that's why I thought for the most of the series, it's trashy, but it's fun. Like, it's harmless. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's trashy. But that scene was like, left a bitter taste in my mouth. And then, like, I finished it. I saw it through the end. I'm like, really did not need that scene. It could have just been, like, this trashy, fun series. And I don't know why you needed that. And especially since that scene was already controversial in the books 20 years ago. And they feel like they updated it and it was less rapey, but it still kind of was. I mean, I don't know if anyone watched Poldark, but I'm getting flashbacks of that whole controversy also about the Poldark, was it rape, was it not rape scene, like a couple of years ago.
Also, I have not watched Poldark yet. I really want to, though.
There was one scene that was like iffy, one of those things. Yeah. But it's since it was Poldark, the guy kind of forcing himself on a woman, it was kind of easier for people to, you know, well, that's rapey, right?
Yeah.
But here, like you said, since it was the man who was the victim, yeah, some people didn't recognize it for what it was. And yeah, and again, it's super, super, super disturbing that it's a black man being manipulated by a white woman. And you know, of course, they live happily ever after, and they never speak of it again, and it's all tied neatly with a ribbon at the end, which is also annoying, because then, and of course, probably Bridgerton's going to be renewed and whatever, and people are going to forget
about it. Yeah, it was like the fifth most watched.
Forget about it. Yeah, right? Yeah. And everyone's talking about it, and some of the people I've talked to didn't even know what I was talking about. It's like, I said, but that scene, though, oh, the sex, no. That scene at the end. Oh, and yeah, to have to explain to people why it's problematic is also, like, very distressing. I don't know, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
It should have just been trashy. I said, just be trashy, but don't be that. I don't know what else to say. It's completely unnecessary. So
I actually saw somebody at one point referring to the show as a slow burn, and I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
No.
It's like the fastest fucking relationship I've ever seen in a television show. Are you kidding? They're married in, what, episode 5? Like,
yeah.
5 or 6.
A slow burn is they would be married in season 4 or something. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, that is, a slow burn wouldn't even have them married by the end of the season. What are you talking about? Yeah, it's, I don't know. People need instant gratification so they don't see the problems with it, I guess. I don't know.
Maybe.
But yeah, I wanted to like it a lot. And like I said, I did after a few episodes, but then I just, it was pretty much that episode. I was like, can we stop with the problematic and get back to the plot? And then it just, I didn't care when they did. Like, they squandered. Yeah, they squandered everything by then.
I like the subplots. I actually, as usual, I don't like the main story of, like, the main couple. Like, okay,
yes.
Obviously they're getting together. There's no tension there. You're interested in the other characters who have more interesting, like, things going on with them, but...
Simon's pretty, but that's about all they have going on.
That's
back.
Who he is.
Yeah.
I like Eloise, of course, and
Eloise
Penelope. Even the Penelope family, the Featheringtons. Like, they had an interesting dynamic with, I like Polly Walker since Rome. So I'm like, I know she's being portrayed as like this problematic mama or whatever, but she was more interesting than Mrs. Bridgerton, to be fair.
Oh god, yeah.
I think the Featheringtons, except the two sisters who we don't know anything about at the end, even by the end of the season. But
Matt was just like, this feels like Cinderella's family.
Yeah.
Because they're the
just
two
stepsisters.
The evil stepsisters, yeah. And then,
the poor, what's her name? The poor pregnant, poor cousin,
oh,
something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember her name.
Marina. Marina something.
Marina.
Yeah, but I mean, there was a lot going for it, like, plot-wise. There's a lot of interesting plot there. And they have a really good cast. And they have those nice, they have the big budget for the nice costumes and the nice sets.
Yeah,
but they really should. I don't know why they chose this, like, bad Harlequin, like you said, the bad Harlequin novel series, when there's probably some decent Jane Austen fan fiction out there that they could have used.
I read one once about Jane Seymour from Emma. It wasn't bad. It was like about her story, because obviously you know very little about her.
Okay.
Jane Fairfax. Jane Seymour. That was one of Henry VIII's wives.
But yeah, Jane, she is an interesting character.
I can't remember. It was so long ago I read it. But I liked it. Usually I avoid most historic fiction. Just like, I read the stuff that was actually written at the time.
Okay.
Did you have anything else you wanted to say about Bridgerton?
Oh, I don't know where we left off, but I was just going to say my favorite aspect is probably Lady Danbury and Simon's relationship that I thought was really sweet.
Yes.
And I also, I did think the Featheringtons were funny, but the other two Featheringtons just basically didn't exist. They may as well have been in Cinderella's Ugly Stepsisters.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it was like, whatever. And I feel like the reveal that Penelope was Whistledown is kind of like it's also true in the books, I guess, and it comes out, you know, later on. But I feel like it makes her look really bad in this particular story to have introduced Marina in that way, have her be her cousin and then like have her just reveal her secret and tank her family. Yep. Just so that Colin won't marry Marina. I was like, girl, you need to relax. So yeah, that's all.
Yeah, I was really surprised.
Colin
that
isn't
they revealed
even worth it.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Colin is a drip. He was so boring here. And I can't tell him apart from his brothers. So whatever.
I mean, Anthony's the asshole.
Right.
Benedict is the artist, whatever.
The not gay
one.
I love exactly. I love how his storyline was like, I learned I'm not gay, and now I will date this seamstress. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that was weird. I really thought, I was like, oh, are they going to make him gay? And then it was like, no, he sees other gay people and he's like icky about it. So, like, but he meets somebody he likes because of it.
Right.
And I was like,
he was, I think he was supposed to show like, hey, this man is living his best life and being true to himself, and being true to myself is dating this seamstress. So I will do that. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm very happy for you.
Yeah, that was weird. And I guess, so the next book or the next story will be Anthony's story?
Yes. Apparently. Yeah. Where he has to marry this lady, you know, for the status or something, whatever it is. But then I think, spoilers, he would fall for her sister.
Oh, yeah. I'm
like,
yeah.
Okay. Well, can't y'all just trade? I mean, it's the same family, so it doesn't really matter, does it? But okay, we'll find out.
Is this selling Bridgerton for you, Richard? What's your hot
take? I mean, a little bit. I'm definitely morbidly curious just because, like, I like a good period drama.
It's not a good period drama.
Let me rephrase that. When I say good, I just mean I like a period drama. I also love me some trash TV. But definitely Bridgerton will, it's probably going to make the list of shows I mean to get around to watching. And I mean, depending on how long this quarantine lasts, I'll still have time. Like I said, I've gotten through like 4 shows on my list that I didn't think I'd ever get a chance to watch. So The Crown is next. So maybe I'll bump up Bridgerton. You know, it's only 8 episodes. Fun fact, Cobra Kai was one of those shows that was on the list of shows I need to watch. So, Valerie, you should bump Cobra Kai up on your list.
I've only heard good things about Cobra Kai, and I can't believe
it's true.
My new goal, I'm now just going to text you guys every week to ask if you guys have watched Cobra Kai. Yeah, I'm going to constantly bother, like, have you watched Cobra Kai yet? Have you done it yet? That's what we need. Netflix, give me a Cobra Kai Bridgerton crossover event. I don't care how it happens. Just make it happen.
They're descendants.
Oh, that'd be awesome. I want it.
Randomly, a Featherington shows up in the little Cobra Kai.
Lady Whistledown is secretly. I don't know.
Would she be a Miyagi-Do or a Cobra Kai student? That's the question.
We don't know.
The only podcast where you're going to hear the Cobra Kai Bridgerton fanfic, ladies and gentlemen.
You heard it here first.
You heard it here first. Here. If you find it on Tumblr, they copied us.
All right. If we have nothing else to say, we'll move on to Doctor Who, which had a new episode on New Year's Day. It was Day, right? Yeah. Which, it was really bad. We watched all of last season. We talked about last season on the podcast. So I was like, I remember talking about it. And I remember that Matt was convinced we didn't watch the last season. And so we were
like,
are
you serious?
He doesn't remember it at all.
That's so funny.
And I was like, okay, remember like the master and the like the timeless child thing? And I was like, that was last season. Yeah. He completely forgot. Which I guess goes to show how memorable the show has been lately.
Sad times.
It used to be such a big part of our lives, and now it's like, oh, Doctor Who's on. Yeah.
I didn't even finish the last season, or did I not start the last season? See, I also don't know where I am. I still left off. I remember I really loved the Rosa Parks episode. I watched the one after that, and then that's it. I don't know why. I just haven't watched
that
since.
You're like a season and a half behind.
Okay, I'm a season and a half behind. So, and I didn't even, and I would like the season up to then. It's just that I had, other stuff got in the way, and then I never got around to coming back.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's been okay.
Yeah.
I like Jody, and I like her friends, not companions anymore. but
her friends.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm not like super invested in it. The timeless child thing was interesting. And I, you know, I know a lot of people were mad at it, but I'm like not as invested in the lore, like going back till 1963. So I guess it didn't matter as much to me. Like I didn't, you know, it didn't bother me as much to make that huge of a change, especially because this is the kind of show you're going to have to do that. If you want to keep reinventing it after 50 years, you're going to have to do huge things like that change everything. So that didn't bother me. As for this, like Matt couldn't remember that she was in prison. That's where he was like, we must not have watched last season. And I was like, no, it happens like right at the end and it's out of nowhere. That's why you can't remember it, because it was like a weird thing. Just happened. But yeah, I mean, the episode was fine. I thought it was funny that somebody was like, Chibnall should be fired because if he can't even make Jack Harkness interesting. And I was like, Chibnall literally wrote the first two seasons of, like, he was the showrunner for Torchwood. Do people not remember that? That was the show. Yeah, it was like,
sad.
It was okay.
Be excited about Jack. That's.
Yeah, I mean, I had been more excited about him before. Like, it wasn't a great episode for him, but I have hopes that we'll see him again.
Yeah. I mean,
he's not doing anything. John Barman's not doing anything now, right?
He's in Cardiff right now.
Yeah, so he can go film Doctor Who episodes.
Yeah. I actually would not be surprised if he actually is filming for it, because he's in Cardiff right now. What else is he going to be in Cardiff for now? Because he lives in Palm Springs. Or at least he did. Maybe not anymore, but...
Well, that makes sense. I don't know why they wouldn't utilize him more if they have the chance, and then it'll bring some, maybe nostalgia factor for people, so...
They also teased... Well, I guess they didn't tease, but they made, like, a little reference to Gwen, so it's like, are they gonna, like, try to do something with Torchwood again? Because, like, Miracle Day just kind of left a pretty big cliffhanger, and that's been like 9 years.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, 10 years. Oh my god, where has time gone?
I know, right? It's scary.
That's crazy.
Did I finish Miracle Day? I can't remember if I did.
I don't remember if I finished Miracle Day either.
I know I started it. I don't remember if I finished it.
I remember finishing it because I remember thinking, like, oh, this is kind of huge. Like, Miracle Day definitely, like, puts, like, a whole, like, it definitely is something I've always wanted Doctor Who to address or something, and it's like they never have. I think they kind of waved it away in, like, one of the Smith episodes, like, over with the crack years. In the universe. Like, but, like, it's just one of those things I was like, this kind of is a huge thing that somebody should address.
They will in another 10 years, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah. Another 10 years.
And like a big, in like an audio drama or something like that.
Right.
I mean, in 2 years we're gonna have like the 60th anniversary. It's freaking me out.
That's like, gonna be it? That's so weird. We just had the 50th one.
Yep, we're already there. Like... Am I the only one who feels like it should really take a break again?
Like take up or like. A break, like what
I'm not saying like 20 years or whatever it was again, right. But like maybe a few years off.
Well, you want to know something that's really interesting is that Doctor Who has now been running as long as it was off the air originally. So we're at the point of, you know, like that time period, because it ended in what, 1989, and then it came back in 2005. So we're pretty much approaching that point of where it's almost been here as long as it was gone, which is kind of insane that there's like an entire generation that grew up watching the Davies era that's now like the Davies era was like 11 years ago now, so that's just so weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
So Captain Jack Harkness, like, we haven't seen him in like a Doctor Who story since 2009. It's been 12 years.
Oh my god,
years,
it
so
really was that long, wasn't it?
A lot of maybe kids who are watching.
But the Davies era started when? 2005?
The
ninth Doctor started
2005. ¿Dónde
está ahorita que está? Yeah. So, yeah, they're, like, there's an entire generation.
¿Qué vamos a hacer contigo mañana?
Tatiana, we can hear you.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
An entire generation of kids who, like, who are probably seeing Jack Harkness for the first time, where he's, like, a legendary figure for them in the way that, like, characters like Sarah Jane Smith were for an audience who saw her on that episode. So that's just the weirdest thing for me, is that, like, you know, time is sort of how time moves forward like that, which is, you know, I think that's where I came down on the whole Doctor Who thing, because when you asked if I think it should take some time off, maybe, but maybe it's more we need to take some time off from it, because, like, I'm more in the camp of, like, because I watched the premiere, and I was like, I enjoyed it, but it didn't give me the same feeling that it used to. You know, I haven't really watched Doctor Who, like, fanatically like I did, I think, since 2014 is the last time I watched it. And part of that was because college and everything kind of kept me from, like, staying up to date and everything. Also, they had, like, the worst release schedule, where, like, they would be gone for a year and a half and stuff like that. But also, like, part of it just, like, you know, when I started watching Doctor Who, I was a kid, and now it's like, you know, Doctor Who has always been essentially I'm sorry. But, like, Doctor Who has always been, like, in my mind, a kid's show. So, like, you know, maybe it's, you know, maybe Doctor Who has changed, but also I have. So, you know, if the kids like it, you know, I don't talk to a lot of children because I don't have any. But, you know, if kids like it, then, you know, that's what matters.
Really what counts. Yeah. Kind of like Power Rangers, right? Everyone's always mad about Power Rangers, but it's like, well, it is literally for 4-year-olds.
Yeah, it is, like, you know, some things are, you know, you can enjoy it as an adult, but, you know, we got to remember, you know, I've always tried to maintain the mindset that at its heart, this is for kids, you know, and, you know, if it can appeal to me, that's great. If it doesn't, I got plenty of other stuff to watch, and I still have the memories of the original. And, you know, Doctor Who, that's the whole point of the show. It regenerates and comes back and morphs, and maybe someday we'll vibe again. I like the new Doctor. I liked a little bit of what I saw last season. I liked that it was more standalone-ish. I didn't watch any of last season, but I just got HBO Max, so let's see if I can get through it. As soon as I got HBO Max, the first thing I did was watch a bunch of my old favorite Doctor Who episodes, so there's probably I'll get around to that last season.
Yeah, I went from being, because I got married in 2005, by the way. So that's why I was like, you made me feel old.
Congratulations.
Well, look at you, miss, in a loving relationship for 17 for 16 years. Way to humble brag.
Anyway, it wasn't actually until 2006 that I became obsessed, and it lasted through what, like, the second or third? No, I guess I probably made it through all of 11, and then it was really Capaldi's first year that I didn't feel like it was the Doctor, and then I stopped watching, and I didn't watch his last two seasons, and so I started back up with Jodie, and yeah. And it just, yeah, I think the magic is gone for me. I just, it's okay.
But, like, you know, yeah, and like you said, you know, it's, I think I was the same way that, you know, the Capaldi era, you know, there were good episodes in it. It just didn't hook me the same way. I think because Moffat was writing for an older audience, which, you know, is sad because I'm an adult, but, you know, I like my Doctor Who to maintain that childlike whimsy. That's why my favorite era is the Davies era. Because he, you know, kept it, you know, and that.
Yeah.
And then Smith, I think, was a good Doctor because he plays, like, Willy Wonka, essentially. So, Capaldi has some good episodes. I think his Return of Dr. Mysterio is one of my favorite Christmas specials. I guess that's the other thing. Like, for me, it felt weird is because, like, these holiday specials used to be, like, big events. And even, like, the way they wrote them always seemed really big. Whereas, like, this one and the previous one, like, I watched them because they were Daleks, because Daleks are my favorite Doctor Who villain, and they're just one of my favorite things ever. I actually have a Dalek on my desk. Mm-hmm. I just love them so much. So if you were to ask me my 10 favorite Doctor Who episodes, I guarantee you five of them are probably Dalek episodes just because they're Daleks. But, like, I don't know. This one didn't really feel like a big event, and neither did the last one. It felt more like just like another episode.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I also guess I'm a little sad, you know, that they moved from Christmas to New Year's. I understand why, but I just, like, I liked Doctor Who at Christmas. It feels very Christmassy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean, it's one of those
traditions.
Yeah, we watched one of the Christmas episodes with Capaldi, even though we weren't watching the show, because we were in Wales at the time, and it's like, that's what you do on Christmas Day, you watch Doctor Who. And then it moved, and it was just like, whatever.
Oh yeah, even when I wasn't watching the show, like I always made time on Christmas to watch the ones with Capaldi, because they were just like, that's what you did on Christmas, and it's a tradition I still maintain even when there aren't new specials. Like, I've watched now the Christmas Carol one every Christmas for 10 years now, so, and it's probably going to be that way till the day I die.
That's your Christmas tradition. That's sweet.
I love it. Yeah. I love it so.
Maybe I just need to walk away for a while myself and then come back and try and catch up. But then I was supposed to, when I started watching 13, I meant to go back because, you know, everybody was like, well, Capaldi's last two, or his other two seasons were much better, although they couldn't get much worse than that first season. But I love Peter Capaldi, but I just I can't make myself go back and watch them. So I'm afraid if I stop, I'll just stop.
Watch Cobra Kai first, then go back.
The agenda Cobra is Kai strong. Agenda.
His priorities are clear. Yeah. So yeah.
You think I'm gonna let you? Think I'm gonna beat this horse till it's dead?
Uh-oh! I'll have you and Corey coming at me. I'm screwed. Well, it's funny because I was talking to Corey while he was actually watching it at one point, and he said, you know, I was like, I think I've seen the first Karate Kid movie when I was a kid, but I don't remember anything about it, and I didn't like it, so I never saw anymore. And he was actually saying, he's like, it's okay, I think there's only been references to the first movie, and then 3 seconds later, he's like, oh, nope, there was a reference to the third movie, never mind. I was like, God dang it.
But you don't need to have seen the other ones to appreciate Karate Kid, though, because like my mother has never seen a Karate Kid movie, but like she loves the show. Like, her and my dad started watching it, and my mom, because the show does a good job of flashing back to like there's something you need to know from the other movies, they'll actually flash back to the movies to show you. So
okay, that's good.
But okay, yeah. So you can go back to Capaldi when you finish Cobra Kai. Those are the rules.
Right. All right, well, let's move on to our last, which is the obvious, because, like, do we always end with MCU? No, but it's the most important, and we're already at an hour and 30 minutes. We really
get oh, boy. About. Oh, boy.
Anyway, so after a year and a half of nothing because of...
Poor Puffy, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hellstrom get no love.
Okay, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. itself just basically broke off, and I love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. like, don't get me wrong, but it did like break off completely, and it's like not even in the same universe anymore. And I didn't watch Hellstrom.
I slogged through every episode of Hellstrom because I was I did.
Why?
Because I liked the premise, and I liked the first episode, and then it just went downhill from there. Hellstrom is a good example of like, I'm glad that era of Marvel TV is over, just because, like, not everything needs to be a 10-hour movie. If Hellstrom was, like, a 22-episode, like, Supernatural-type show, it would have been great. Or if it was, like, a 2-hour movie, it would have been awesome. But a 10-hour miniseries-type movie, it just could not sustain itself.
No. Yeah, I pretty much figured when no one I knew was talking about it, that was a bad sign. And no, I don't, I think you're one of like three people I know who watched it at all.
I am one of the only three people that watched it. I don't know anyone else who watched it.
Yeah, it was hard because it was like, it was very clearly not going to get a second season. So I wasn't sure I wanted to give it time, but I was like, well, if somebody wants to tell me it's good, but then nobody did. So I was like, well, I'm going to, I'll use that time for Cobra Kai instead. How about that?
It's a bad sign that like, yeah, use it for Cobra Kai. It's a bad sign that like, even my dad, who like, my dad will watch any show that has like monsters or supernatural stuff in it, he didn't even watch it. And like, my mom didn't even know it was a Marvel show. She was like, wait, this is supposed to be Marvel? She was like, there's no Marvel logo in front of it. I was like, because they just wanted to distance themselves from it.
There's not even a Marvel logo in front of it?
No, there's no Marvel logo in front of it. There's no Marvel's Hellstrom on top of it. There's no sign that it's a Marvel show other than the credits that say based off Marvel comics.
That's insane. Wow. Okay.
But yeah, WandaVision. It's been a year and a half.
The thing that actually matters.
Yeah.
So yes, two episodes of WandaVision. Mm-hmm. Finally, literally a year and a half, because the last thing we got was freaking Far From Home. And I have no idea what's going on, but I like it. That's all I can say. No, I'm kidding.
It's so much fun.
Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it.
I feel like pretty much everything that happens is a clue, but you just don't understand how it's a clue.
Yeah, right. Like, yeah, because, that's probably true.
Because, like, you know, the repeating of, like, the for the children and stuff. Like, I feel like all of that means something. I just don't know what it means. You know?
It's like, mm-hmm. they're just, this is like the this is the mystery box done right, where like, I just want to know more, and like, just, you know, I'm glad they released the first two episodes together, because yes. I feel like if you had waited yes. for a week for the second one, it might have like lost a little bit, but airing them together felt very like, satisfying. You're like, okay, I get the idea of what this show's gonna be, I get, you know, the first one I think would have made a lot of people think like, is this gonna be the whole show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you needed to see the transition between just all the different things, and that something
yeah, very strange. Yeah, you need strange. To see them transition from Dick Van Dyke to Bewitched.
Yeah.
Or was it I Love Lucy color. To Bewitched?
First. It's a bit of both, because, well, because like the kitchen is almost an exact replica of the Dick Van Dyke kitchen in the first mm-hmm. episode. Like, I was, because I used to like watch the Dick Van Dyke on Nick at Night, and I was like, I remember being like, that's the exact same kitchen. That's the same kitchen, almost down to like, even like the window and everything, the way it opens like that. I was like, oh my God, they really committed to this.
I thought it was funny because I honestly, like, at the end of the Bewitched episode, for a second, I was like, are they just going to randomly have Vision, like, be played by somebody else for like
a second? That would have been so funny. That would have been so funny.
It would have been hilarious. You could have just had him make himself look like somebody else, and then he's like, oh, wait, that's wrong. And then he goes back, and it would have been funny. But, you know, yeah, maybe that would have confused too many people. Although that's the main joke about Bewitched, is that all of a sudden it was a different actor and they yeah. just never addressed it.
Which, you know what? I feel like more shows need to do that. You can recast and it's fine. You don't need to do yeah. an entire, like, if that was a comic book or like a movie, or now, they would dedicate like 10 episodes to why Darren transformed.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously.
It's like, Roseanne kind of got in on that joke where, like, you know, they would change Becky's even between weeks of episodes.
Yes. Just let it go. Yeah, so I love the commercials.
The commercials are, like, huge clues to something.
Well, are they clues to something, or is it just flashbacks to her past? Because the first one is basically the bomb that she and that killed her family, and that yeah. she and Pietro watched. And then
the Hydra watch.
Yeah, and then the second is, yeah, the Hydra is, that's, and Strucker is how they got their powers.
Yeah, I think it's, like, Wanda's most repressed memories, because, like, or, like, her most, like, her biggest nightmares. Because mm-hmm. if the couple in the commercials is the same as the one in the toaster commercial.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. it makes me think that those are Wanda and Pietro's parents.
Oh. Interesting.
Oh.
Because yeah, they're both, like, because I was like,
that's an interesting theory.
Yeah.
And so I think that's like, because again, the fact that it's the same for both ones. And again, if maybe in the third episode, it'll be a different person and this theory goes out the window. But if they
but
show,
I think it's deliberate that it's the same two people.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that we'll definitely see Quicksilver again. He's going to pop up, because every sitcom, you know, you got the wacky uncle. You know, they're going to frame it like he's going to burst through the door like Kramer, and there's going to be the big like applause from the audience.
So, Agnes is something.
She's someone,
like, right?
She's someone important.
There's something to her. But do you think the husband that she keeps mentioning is also someone? Or is it just one of those sitcom jokes where there's always, like, the neighbor you never meet, but is always mentioned?
I think it's both, right? I think it is a sitcom joke, but it is going to be an important character of some kind. Yeah.
Well, you see the trailer, right? Like, there was just a tiny scene with Catherine Han going, like, breaking character and going, like, help me or something. Right?
Mm.
Yeah. There is a character in the comics called Agatha Harkness, so I think she's most likely that character. But yeah, I think her husband Ralph is definitely, like, it's both the sitcom joke of the husband we never see, but also probably someone else. I think it'd be super funny if it is Mephisto. I want them to visualize Mephisto like how they used to visualize Wilson on Home Improvement, where you just see the top of his head over the fence.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want.
That'd be funny. I've seen so many theories about, like, who it could be that's doing it. So yeah, Mephisto was one. Nightmare was another. But apparently somebody else was saying that
it's Wanda herself.
Somebody else was saying that it seems like this is a combination of both House of M and Secret, like the run up to Secret Invasion. And in that, the person who was manipulating Wanda was actually Doom. Which would be pretty amazing if this is when they introduced us to Doom. But I don't know. Because you wouldn't expect that.
Yeah, you wouldn't expect it. I wonder if
unlike the movies, his origin is not actually about what happened, the same thing that happens to the Fantastic Four. So it would, in some ways, make sense to just introduce him in a completely different way that doesn't have to be tied completely to them.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I did see a friend of mine. So a friend started like this WandaVision theories group. And so she's British and she decided to look up, you know, the date on the calendar, which is 8/23, but in the UK it would be 23/8. Avengers 238 is a comic about Vision and an attempt to break into his unconscious mind after an accident. It also has Monica Rambeau in it. Which is kind of interesting.
That's something. That's definitely a clue.
Yeah, good job.
Well, someone pointed out that, like, further reasons why most likely Agnes is Agatha Harkness, the witch, because she says her wedding anniversary to Ralph is June 2nd, which June 2nd is when the Salem witch trial started.
Oh, interesting.
So, you know, there's definitely, there's a lot, there's just so much, like, they're hiding in plain sight, like,
yeah.
That, mm-hmm. And we're not, and obviously they're good at it because, like, you know, everyone is looking at is the, you know, how well they recreate the sitcom setup and formula.
Yeah.
Like, and because that's what I love the most about the first two episodes is that, like, unlike most times when they do, like, the sitcom setup, it's as always a commentary on how fake everything is and, like, in a negative sense. And, like, it always is immediately something sinister afoot. Here it's designed to be comforting, like how people watch these shows. They're comforting, you know. There's a reason why sitcoms endure and why we love going back to them. It's because they make us feel safe. So the idea that this is how Wanda is coping with everything, how she's safe, and then it's reality, the outside world coming to break it up is, you know, interesting. The idea that this is going to be a fight between comfort and reality.
Yes.
Because, like, I honestly would love just a sitcom of Wanda and Vision. Like, every time the real world starts to pierce in, I was like, no, don't. I don't. I love Marvel, but, like, give me my sitcom. Give me How I Met Your Vision.
And you can tell that both of them are just having so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're having the time of their lives. They're
so good in it.
The accents. They're so good. This is the best material they've gotten. Like, in all the times they were in the films, nothing good. Well, they're always sidelined, but now they're like, this is their time to shine, and they're really, really, really getting into it, and I love it. It's just fun to watch.
Yeah, I know it's early, but God, I hope both Paul Bettany and Elizabeth Olsen get Emmy nominations or get considered for them because they're so good here, especially Elizabeth Olsen. Like, she's carrying a lot of heavyweight here and, like, her commitment to both formats. And then it's just stupid that Paul Bettany is both so handsome and so funny. Like, yeah. I remember being like, you can't be both. It's like when I found out Hemsworth was funny, I was like, you jerk. This isn't fair. You should be handsome but not funny.
Get one or the other.
Yeah, you can only be one. I'm sorry. It's not fair.
Tatiana, how did you feel about it? Because didn't you say you were a big Wanda and Vision fan?
Well, I'm not necessarily a big Wanda and Vision fan, but I'm a very big fan of the idea of Wanda Vision, the show.
Okay.
So I am, so far I'm lucky. What I like is that it's a little bit, it feels like like The Mandalorian in that you could just decide to watch it and it could be like, oh, I'm watching like a parody of a, you know, 50s sitcom or whatever, you know, and kind of ignore the other stuff that's going on. Whereas if you're watching it from a Marvel fan perspective, then we're sitting here like, what does Ralph mean? What does who's watching the thing? You know, so there's lots of layers to it, which I really enjoy. And I do really love Elizabeth Olsen. I think she's doing a great job. Kathryn Hans, super funny. So So yeah, I mean, so far I'm enjoying it. I'm not like well versed enough in MCU lore to really know all the answers to the questions, but I am well versed enough to know when I am should be asking questions. So it is interesting to see what the show will reveal to me from here on out. But so far, I did really enjoy the first two episodes. I even watched them at normal speed. That's how much I enjoyed them.
Wow.
So that tells you exactly. Wait, it tells you everything you need to know.
What do you mean by normal speed? What do you mean?
Okay, so because, I don't have time to watch things. So I watch everything at least 1.5 speed. If there is an option for... Yep.
You can watch The Crown at two times.
It'll still feel like one speed. You can... Because there are some shows, like I watch it at 1.5 or even 2. And then when I'm like, let me slow it down, I'm like, they're talking like they're underwater. Why is it taking so long? Just get to the next line. But yeah.
Oh, I have so many questions.
You broke it.
I'm sorry. It's like, it started.
I never want to hear one of my takes is too hot, because this is the hottest of takes.
This is the
Smash Mouth walking on the sun hot of takes.
It started because, what was it? Was it The Incredibles? The sequel to The Incredibles came out. We were going to go see it at Capitan or whatever, right, Valerie?
Yeah, Bellcap. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then I was like, I need to rewatch the first one so that I can prepare, right? But I didn't have enough time. There was literally less time left before I had to go than there is in the movie. So I was like, okay, VLC has an extra speed thing. So I did it. And then I was like, oh my God, I have so much time now. Get ready to go. And so now I'm like, when I have too much to watch, which is always 1.5 speed. So yeah. There you go. That's my story.
Definitely broke my brain. Definitely broke. I was just like,
but this was important enough that you gave it full speed. That's love.
Exactly. Exactly. I was like, I want to look at these clues. I want to enjoy the visuals. I love how even the second episode, the visuals looked slightly different from the first one. It was like we kind of like shifted a little bit the decade or whatever you want to say. And I assume that we're going to see more of that. Like we're going to like hurdle through different genres or times or whatever. So
yeah, I think the next one is the 70s, so that's the Brady Bunch one, I think.
Yeah.
And then if I were to guess, 80s is gonna be, I think they said like what was the show with Michael J. Fox? Family Matters?
Oh my God.
Family Matters.
Family Ties.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then
Family
90s,
Matters is Steve Urkel.
Yeah. And then 90s, right. I'll go on. I think 90s will be Roseanne. I think everyone thinks it's going to be Full House because it's an Olsen, but I feel like we've already gotten a glimpse of like Elizabeth Olsen in like a Roseanne type outfit, and because that was like the big sitcom of the 90s. And then 2000s will probably be like Modern Family, because here's my theory is that whenever we get to the 2000s one, that's when we kind of popularize the whole like talking into the camera thing. That's when Wanda or Vision is going to be able to speak to someone in the outside of someone who's watching them, like Sword, since we know someone's watching this through a TV monitor. So like, that's going to be like where they're like breaking the fourth wall to literally get out of the dimension.
That could be interesting. Now they should do Glee at some point just so they can sing. Cause that'd be hilarious.
Make it happen. Give me my Marvel musical, you cowards.
Cause that would be absolutely amazing. Yeah. I feel like I need to, I haven't had a chance to rewatch them yet, but I absolutely feel like I need to, and I absolutely feel like after every single episode, I have to go back and watch everything again.
Yeah.
Because I think that's just going to be like, wait, what, yeah, go back. Did they hint at this before? Yeah. So the, what's it called? The helicopter, the toy helicopter she came. Do we think that's the interpretation of how Monica gets in there? Like, that's how she got in somehow, and that's how Wanda's brain has decided to manipulate it? Same with like, the beekeeper guy. I guess there is apparently some villain, random-ass villain that's a beekeeper, but I think that's more just, a hazmat suit.
Well, yeah, he's not a beekeeper.
He's made of bees.
That's right.
Made of bees, yeah.
Yeah, he's not a beekeeper, sorry, but he's covered in bees. There is a villain that is covered in bees at some point, but like...
Oh, no, he's not just covered in bees. He's made bees. Of bees. Oh, he's literally bees. Just a collection of sentient bees that form a person.
Because, of course, because comic books.
I don't think it's him, but God, I hope it's him.
It's probably like just a hazmat suit. That's somehow how she's decided to, like, her brain is.
Maybe this is how we find out Wanda's allergic to bees.
do we think? So obviously she, like, obviously her brain is creating it, and it's going to, we know, create children at some point. Do we think that she'll make them real? Because that's the whole thing, is she can alter reality. That she'll make them real and they will continue on, or does she lose all of that when she wakes up or whatever it is?
I think that if they are real, it's going to definitely be one of those questions on what is real, because if they feel real and if they are, if they can express emotions, does that not make them real? Because, like, and I think that'll probably be one of the lead-ins into Multiverse of Madness, is Wanda maybe realizing that her children are entered, like, these are from kids from another universe, and she has to go find them, or, like, looking for them. So I think that'll maybe play a factor into there.
I'm so scared of, like, what the multiverse is going to mean for so many things, but, like, excited.
Why?
Scared.
Why are you scared?
Well, no, the scared really comes down to more of the, Matt has a theory that Peter Parker is going to get trapped in another universe. Oh. And that's how they move Spidey back to Sony
and out of MCU.
So
yeah, that's probably fair. Yeah.
That makes me sad, because Sony it's
gonna
will just kill it.
It's going to be a trade where Holland gets put in another universe, but Wade Wilson ends up walking into the MCU.
That would be so funny. Oh my god. Sliding doors. I want this.
I feel like Deadpool is going to have a cameo in either Spider-Man or Multiverse of Madness. Like, that's, like, the best way to explain it. And then literally for, like, Deadpool 3, you can explain, like, I've been here all along, and he just negotiated a contract or something. Yeah. Have him march into Kevin Feige's office.
That would be funny. Yeah, I wonder when they're going to release that movie, because, like, they've said that it's, you know, there's a lot going on. And so it's like, I think it's going to be one of those things where it's connected, but it's not. Because who knows when the hell it's going to happen.
Well, we've got a couple of years to find out, I guess. Yeah. Who knows how long we're going to have to wait.
All I know is, can we start, can we beat COVID so that we can go to movies again? Because I'm pretty sure Black Widow is going to get pushed back to July at the earliest, and I'm sad.
That's just going to cause such a chain reaction again, because then Shang-Chi has to move, and then Eternals will have to move again. And
it's just that domino effect of everything.
I think what they would do is have Shang-Chi jump first over Eternals. Like, Eternals would stay in November, and they'll just move Shang-Chi to the beginning of next year again. But I don't want that. I want all three of them to come out this year like they're supposed to now.
Yeah, because then that would make another ripple effect for next year, because then that would be five MCU movies in 2023.
And even I think that would be a lot.
Yeah, like, four is pushing it. Four will definitely be, like, a lot, but, like...
Four and television shows. That's why honestly think we're at the point where you're barely going to go a few weeks without MCU content. We're going to go from this year and a half off to here have all of it.
Oh, yeah, no, it's gonna be on top of itself, because when WandaVision ends, there's literally a week break until Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Yep.
And then Loki, when that ends, right? It's a week until Black Widow, and then if Black Widow does open, I think, I guarantee you, Loki will probably drop around Memorial Day.
Probably.
And then
is right after that.
Yeah, well, and then Loki will finish, if it lands on Memorial Day, if it runs for 6 weeks, it'll end the week before Shang-Chi opens, or Shang-Chi, I guess, is how it's pronounced.
Yeah. And then What If?
And What then If? And then Ms. Marvel, Hawkeye. Marvel.
Jesus.
Oh, man.
I love my MCU content, but even my brain is going to be fried at a certain point.
And in between, there's going to be Star Wars stuff, is there or no?
I don't think Star Wars stuff will kick off in full until the end, because the Bad Batch will probably come sometime around this summer, but then Boba Fett doesn't come till 2018 Christmas. December. Yeah, and then 2022 is when we'll probably get more stuff. That's when we're going to get, like, Mandalorian Season 3, probably a lot of other stuff like that. So, Star Wars took control last year. Marvel will take control this year. And then they can share 2022.
Matt just pointed out that there's, Obi-Wan is filming. and they're having all kinds of problems because they chose a quarry right outside of a small village in England, and the people in that village are really pissed off because this is obviously going to be a huge production that's going to disrupt their way of life. And Matt was just like, this is why Doctor Who films in Welsh quarries, because they're out in the middle of nowhere.
I saw that, and it made me wonder, why aren't they filming inside the volume like The Mandalorian?
Yeah.
Like, because also Cassian Andor isn't filming in that either. They're building like actual sets for that. So I'm like,
yeah. And it's funny because it's like, why? Yeah, you don't need. I mean, well, I guess both of those are filming in the UK, but why the UK? It's got to be expensive. And now with Brexit, it's a nightmare to try and get anything sorted. I don't really get, like, it's not like Ewan lives there anymore. He lives in LA. So yeah. It doesn't really make any sense to me, but I don't know. But yes, yeah. If you were going to use a quarry, use them in Wales, because they're out in the middle of nowhere. And that's why Doctor Who literally just films everything. Like, if it's a fucking random ass planet, it's a Welsh court. That's what they do.
It's like, it's every planet in Doctor Who looks like a Welsh countryside. And then everyone in, like that episode of Mandalorian, the Book of Boba Fett, where they obviously shot in Southern California.
Yeah, I have a friend who like knows exactly what route that is. He recognized the spot. So whenever
Really?
Yeah. So whenever all this stops, we're gonna go hiking.
Yeah, because I remember watching the episode. I was like, ah, we're in the Southern California planet.
Yep. Before we end, going back to the Marvel stuff, I just wanted to say that we actually do have confirmation now that, well, not from Marvel, but that Oscar Isaac is going to play Moonlight, because they didn't tell us that in the call, but they gave us the two directors, and so Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead are going to be directing Moonlight, and they, one of them, I think it was Aaron, like, was like, I can't believe I get to direct Oscar Isaac in a Marvel property, and it was like, thank you. We need that confirmation.
They definitely got a call from Disney that day. They were like,
we didn't tell anybody that yet.
Kevin Feige, sure. Definitely gave them a firm talking to.
Yeah. But that's like one of the main things I'm excited about, because I'm like, what is that? And that's supposed to start filming soon, I think.
Well,
so I guess that's going to be beginning of next year.
Yeah. And they just cast Ethan Hawke as the villain, so.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Be cool. He's a very good actor.
Yeah, and look, he's not a villain in the comics, but if they make him for the show, if they make Werewolf by Night the villain, I'm cool with that. I want Ethan Hawke to play a werewolf. I'm a man of simple taste. I want Ethan Hawke to play a werewolf. I want Danny Trejo in a Star Wars, and I want Valerie to watch Cobra Kai.
Well, now I feel really pressured to do it. Her husband, if that's, see, these that's, are the that's only the thing things you want in life.
That's what you don't realize, is that WandaVision actually is connected, because her husband Ralph, that's Ralph Macchio.
Oh my god.
The hottest of hot takes.
If Ralph Macchio is into, like, funny enough, if he does show up in WandaVision, I'm gonna feel so good. That's the wildest guess, but if I'm right, I'm really right.
You're like, what?
Look, I'm gonna be I have power. I can will this into existence, and I'm gonna have to renounce my wish.
Alter reality. Yeah.
Ralph Macchio shows up in some other actor's body.
All right, it's been 2 hours. We probably should wrap this thing up. Thanks for joining us for another Pop a la Carte. As always, you can find more news, reviews, interviews, not like they're happening right now very much, but etc. on withanaccent.com. Follow us at withanaccent on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And the podcast is Pop a la Carte Pod on Twitter and Facebook. Thanks for joining us. Bye.
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 Bye.